On Tech News Today, desperately seeking Satoshi, Turkey may ban Facebook and YouTube, and the NSA has an advice columnist. Sounds like she's been giving some bad advice. All that and more coming up next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
It's Friday, March 7th, 2014, and this is Tech News Today. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 30 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 20% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code TNT314. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy, create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Mike Elgin.
And I'm Jason Howell.
On Tech News Today, we explore the most important stories of the day in conversation with the world's leading journalists. Our guest co-anchor today is Joe Panettiere. Joe is editorial director for The VAR Guy, MSP Mentor, and Talkin' Cloud. Welcome, Joe.
Hey, Mike. Good to see you.
So,
thanks for having me.
I'm very glad to have you today. I'll always love it when you're on the show. Now, we're not at South by Southwest today. How come you didn't go this year? Is it not your kind of scene?
It's definitely my kind of scene, but one of my challenges was I'm located in New York. We have a staff here in New York, so I had a couple of commitments here I couldn't get out of. But that's not a knock on my staff. It's good to be with them.
That's great. If I was in New York with all that weather, I'd be on the first plane to Texas, I tell you.
Absolutely. Yeah, the weather's been they're talking 50 degrees tomorrow, but I think it's about 15 degrees here again today. But no signs of snow, which is nice.
Here in California, 50 degrees is a state crisis, a national emergency. So but for you guys, that's welcome news. Well, let's get right to the news, Joe. The question of the day is he or isn't he? Is a 64-year-old Japanese-American engineer named Dorian Nakamoto the creator of Bitcoin? An extensive, heavily researched 4,500-word article in Newsweek by Leah McGrath Goodman says yes. Dorian Nakamoto says no. So which is it? Brian Fung is a tech reporter for The Washington Post, and he has been covering this story extensively. Welcome, Brian.
Thanks for having me.
Well, now you've done several stories on this, and they're awesome stories. Were you persuaded initially by the Newsweek article?
Well, you know, looking at the way that Nakamoto was responding to the reporter's questions, it definitely did seem fairly convincing in the way that he said, "I'm not associated with that any longer." It definitely seemed like he was connected at least at one point. Now, in light of a lot of the challenges that have come out in response to the article, it's anyone's guess at this point.
Right. Now, what's interesting about this story, and this is a rare moment in stories of this kind, where you have, on the one hand, you have a very well-researched article, and it's very well-researched, and some really compelling arguments, some really compelling circumstantial evidence that this is the guy. And then on the other hand, you have very good evidence that he's not the guy, and there's been a lot of analysis and sort of nitpicking about the details on this. And among these are that, you know, the Dorian Nakamoto character actually has a background that makes him, you know, he's got a background in mathematics, he's got a libertarian bent to him, he's, you know, there are many sort of circumstantial things around it that make it seem like he's the guy. On the other hand, his writing style has been analyzed and compared with some of the online posts by the actual creator of Bitcoin, and they seem to be very, very different people, very, very different writing styles. And of course, you know, you and I are journalists. We know what a good editor can do. So maybe he's the guy and he's been edited. Maybe he's not the guy. Maybe he's a completely different person. But it certainly is an interesting problem. And, you know, I'm sure you've seen the banter within the Bitcoin community. You know, one group of people is saying, this isn't the guy, this isn't the right person. And the other group is saying, doesn't matter if this is the guy or not, leave him alone. Now, do you feel like the media's coverage of this has been excessive and abusive toward Sakamoto?
You know, I think you brought up the issue of, you know, whether or not Nakamoto has been edited or not. I think that's, you know, kind of an interesting comment on the way that internet anonymity works. You know, kind of harks back to that old New Yorker cartoon, you know, on the internet, no one knows you're a dog. It's remarkable how this has set off, you know, guesses and counter guesses as to whether Nakamoto is, you know, truly Dorian Nakamoto or if he's someone else. You know, it could be that, that, you know, Dorian's writing style, which has been compared, as you said, to the writing style of Satoshi Nakamoto. It could be that he's, you know, engaging in some deliberate obfuscation here, if he is, you know, in fact, the actual Satoshi Nakamoto. And if not, you know, that's equally likely. As for, you know, what's happening on online with the comments, you know, I think, you know, both categories of commenters are, you know, there's some merit to what they're saying. You know, what the media has done and, you know, in terms of covering the story and, you know, engaging in a car chase with Nakamoto, that's been, you know, that would be incredibly disruptive to anyone's life. Sure. Absolutely. At the same time, you know, it's also true that Bitcoin is much more than a single person now. It's a fully distributed network. It's, you know, very hard to trace any transaction that happens with the currency. So, you know, to sort of focus on a single individual, while it's interesting, you know, there are a lot more questions concerning the regulation of the currency and its future that have more to do with it than just him.
Certainly. And 8-Bit Steve in the chat room here says, hopefully Mike brings up the mystery response on the P2P Foundation's forum. And what he's referring to is that a post by somebody claiming to be Satoshi Nakamoto appeared on the P2P Foundation's Ning page and said, quote, I am not Dorian Nakamoto. So there's been a denial by somebody who claims to be the real Satoshi Nakamoto. Meanwhile, Newsweek posted something moments ago saying that they stand by their story and they believe that it's true, that Dorian Nakamoto is in fact the creator of Bitcoin. And so this is getting really interesting.
Hey, Mike.
Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, just a couple of thoughts here. What I find so interesting about this is, number one, Newsweek is relevant again, isn't it? How did that happen? Yeah. Certainly interesting there. And it's almost like the media world has been flipped upside down with this story, in that Newsweek's got a great speculative piece here backed with a lot of interviews, a lot of information. And we're all wondering, is it true? Isn't it true? A lot of work went into the piece, but it's a little chattier. It's something that's really driving a lot of dialogue on the web, without a doubt. And it's almost like now in this upside down world, we're all waiting for someone like a TMZ to go out and actually confirm this story and get additional facts for us. So it's almost like the traditional media turns into the gossip driver, and the disruptive media is going to go out and prove the facts for us at this point. So I love this topsy-turvy world we're in, and I'm curious to see. You know, we're getting these minute-by-minute updates. It's almost like watching an election, isn't it, in terms of the latest districts reporting in with their views.
That's right. Right. And it's a really interesting point you make, Joe. And of course, Brian, you're an excellent journalist. I've been following your stuff for a while. Joe, you're an excellent journalist. And I think it's clear what the mistake was made by Newsweek. They had some great reporting. They did some great analysis. But then they made the mistake of trying to arrive at a truth that they didn't know for sure. And journalists right. should be focusing on facts, not truth. You don't take a bunch of facts and say, because we have all these facts, therefore the truth is this. You say, we have all these facts, and you stop there. These are the facts, and this is how it appears, and this is what so-and-so says. But you don't, you know, this article made a huge mistake by coming on strong and saying, this guy is the founder of Bitcoin.
So yeah, there's no smoking gun here. Yeah,
that's right. And so that's a mistake that people tend to make. Well, we have another guest for this conversation, who I'd like to bring in at this point. His name is
Felix
Salmon. Yes, thank you. Who's with Reuters, a blogger for Reuters. Welcome, Felix.
Thank you very much.
Now, Felix, you wrote a really interesting piece called The Satoshi Paradox, which I believe appeared this morning. So what is the Satoshi Paradox?
So the Satoshi Paradox is basically that there's no plausible thing to believe here. Let's go on the assumption. It's not a completely obvious assumption, but let's just work for the time being, make the assumption that either Dorian is Satoshi or he isn't. Then you basically say that the probability of one plus the probability of the other has to come to somewhere near 100%. But neither of those two things seems particularly likely. So you have to kind of, whatever you believe here, you have to believe something improbable, which is like inherently improbable. And so what you wind up doing when you look into this and you start thinking about it on a sort of Bayesian level is you're comparing two sets of quite unlikely things and trying to work out which one is less unlikely. And it's a difficult thing to do.
And who do you think has been more persuasive? Do you think the Newsweek story is more persuasive than the criticism? Just purely based on the evidence that's presented. I'm not asking you what you believe, but what you think, which side you believe has made the better case or has better information or better facts?
Well, I think by definition, all of the facts in the Newsweek article are incorporated into the conversation around the Newsweek article. So people who are talking about the Newsweek article and then incorporating anything else on top of that are going to have an advantage. My main point was that the Newsweek article is a very interesting thesis. It's a very interesting theory. Like, you know, we think that this man, Dorian Nakamoto, could be, Satoshi. That's an interesting thesis. But there's absolutely no way it counts as a scoop. There's no way they've really nailed it down 100%. And so the way it's presented, I think it's wrong. They said this man is Satoshi, and I don't think they can remotely claim to be certain.
That's a really good point. And what do you think this whole thing said? You know, just before you got on, we were having a conversation, and Joe was talking about the interesting world we live in where you have Newsweek, which used to be, you know, a seriously credible publication and is still a credible publication, but they've sort of been on the outs lately, kind of doing something that's slightly irresponsible, claiming to know something that they don't actually know after providing circumstantial evidence for it. And then you have bloggers, which used to be considered flaky and, you know, people in their mother's basements, et cetera, actually fact-checking this hard and really being skeptical and doing the role that good journalists, in fact, should be doing. Of course, there's a lot of good journalism by mainstream publications as well. But what do you think about this new world we live in where bloggers from established publications, I mean, you're in an interesting position because you blog for a highly credible news agency. There are people who are blogging independently who are doing some good journalism around this. So where do people, do we live in a world where you can't really use a publication's brand to know whether they're credible or not?
So I think one of the things that blogs have always been very good at is fact-checking mainstream media. That was more or less what they started doing back when they emerged in the early 2000s, and they've been very good at it ever since. So it's hardly surprising that in a high-profile case like this, the blogs are going to be all over it. I do think that if a blog came out and said, I have uncovered Satoshi Nakamoto, he is Dorian Nakamoto, and he lives in San Bernardino, California. If it didn't have that imprimatur of a big mainstream media brand, people wouldn't have gotten nearly as excited about it. I think the fact that it came out on the cover of a physical magazine, the relaunch cover of Newsweek magazine, and there was this big branded history behind the franchise, really made all the difference here. Because if it had just been some random online publication that no one's ever heard of, people would have just said, oh, there's a random online publication, they've got a crazy theory, it doesn't really make sense, or it does, it's interesting. And people would have been less up in arms about it.
Well, Felix,
I can jump in here real quick. I just think that there's a kind of a structural aspect to this too, in that blogs by their nature kind of emerged out of a conversational space. And, in that respect, bloggers have always been
much more willing to say, well, this is how much we know, and more importantly, this is how much we don't yet know. And so, you know, from that perspective, Newsweek is kind of in a position where it's trying to be definitive in a way that, legacy media publications have always been expected to be. But at the same time, as you were pointing out, there are all these blogs now that are willing to say, you know, just how much we don't yet know and be very upfront and honest about that.
And blogging by its nature is iterative. What you do is you put something up and then you learn more and then you have a conversation and then, the story evolves. What Newsweek tried to do here is a very old media thing, which is nail down the entire story in advance and then put it all out as a finished baked product and then say, you know, we have nothing else to add beyond we stand by our story. And that's a very unwebby way to approach a story, especially mm-hmm. one that's as fluid as this and which is obviously going to evolve.
That's a great point. And of course, I'm increasingly coming to believe that the credibility is found in the brand of the individual writer more than the publication. And I think both mainstream major publications have excellent journalists, excellent writers, and so do a lot of blogs. So you have to, you know, pick and choose the person, I think, more than anything else these days than relying on the brand of the publisher. Well, I want to thank you, Brian Fung, for coming on today and illuminating this subject for us.
Thank you.
All right. And I want to thank you as well, Felix Salmon, for coming on as well.
Thank you.
You can find brand Brian Fung at WashingtonPost.com and also on Twitter at B_Fung, F-U-N-G. And you can find brand Felix Salmon at Reuters.com and also on Twitter at Felix Salmon, spelled just like the delicious fish. Well, in a second, we're going to talk about some serious problems in Turkey with social media. But first, I want to talk about solving your problems with Shutterstock.com. Shutterstock.com is an incredible location and source for over 30 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and yes, video clips. You can find the perfect image or video for your next creative project, whether it's a website, a publication, an advertisement, a video, any sort of creative project, including a blog. I use them for my blog. It's one of the reasons people always tell me that my posts look so awesome all the time, because the photographs that I use from Shutterstock.com can be stunning. And the reason they're stunning is that Shutterstock uses professional photographers and artists in many, many cases. They upload about 20,000 images every single day. So if you were there yesterday looking at their pictures, go back today, there'll be 20,000 more for you to choose from. How do you get through all these pictures? How do you find the picture needle in the haystack that's perfect for your creative project? Well, fortunately, they have sophisticated search tools that allow you to drill down by subject, color, file type, gender, even emotion, things like that. And you can combine those types of terms to find exactly the kind of image or video you're looking for. They have shareable light boxes. So if you're working collaboratively on a project, this is a great way to share the pictures and get their feedback. And they have an award-winning iPad app, which is just beautiful, especially on my Retina iPad Air. It looks just amazing to go through and find pictures that way. They have multilingual customer service. We're an international show here, so we have people all over the world, and they have multilingual customer service, which is really, really great. So no credit card needed. Just start an account and begin to use Shutterstock to help imagine what your next project could be like and save favorite images to a Lightbox to review later. Once you decide to purchase, use the offer code TNT314. Why would you do such a thing? Well, you'll get 20% off any package that Shutterstock offers, and that's a substantial discount. So try Shutterstock.com, and for 20% off, use the offer code TNT314. And we thank Shutterstock for their support of Tech News Today. Turkey's Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan last night strongly suggested that he intends to ban YouTube and Facebook. The statement came in a televised interview on Turkish TV, and he said, quote, "We are determined on this subject, and we will not leave this nation at the mercy of YouTube and Facebook." Look, we're all at the mercy of YouTube and Facebook. When asked, the interviewer directly asked if he might block both sites, and he said yes. But today, Turkey's president, Abdullah Gül, contradicted the prime minister and said the sites would not be banned. We recorded earlier this morning an interview with Istanbul's bureau chief, Joe Parkinson, and he's the bureau chief for the Wall Street Journal. And here's what he had to say. Oh, welcome, Joe.
Good to be here.
So it appears that the prime minister has suggested that he may ban or block YouTube and Facebook, but the Turkish president has contradicted him, saying that this isn't going to happen. Do you have a sense of the possibility one way or the other?
Well, these are heady days in Turkey. The country's locked in a power struggle between the prime minister on the one hand and a faction loyal to a US-based cleric that has influence within government institutions on the other. And in recent weeks, and in fact since December, the country's been roiled by different allegations, different recordings purporting to show corrupt practices by the prime minister himself and some of his officials. He says that these tapes are montages, and that YouTube, Facebook, and other social media platforms are being used by his enemies to falsify evidence against him. And that's why he floated this idea last night, that after elections, in local elections on March the 30th, the government could take steps to ban both YouTube and Facebook. This would have seemed completely impossible just months ago in Turkey, but the political situation is so fluid, it's so dynamic, and we're entering a crucial stage with a number of elections over the next 18 months, that all of a sudden, you know, it seems like it could be a reality. Although I hesitate to say, as you said, you know, he just floated this last night, and the president, who could veto the law in theory, has said that he would not stand for this.
Now, YouTube was banned sporadically between 2007 and 2010, and recently the government's been cracking down, censoring more, and also making these kinds of threats. Do you see a general closing of the internet inside Turkey?
I think that's certainly what analysts and outside observers believe. We've seen, you know, a crackdown on the domestic media, which the European Union has criticized. We've seen the government try to take steps by employing a bunch of people to act on their behalf on Twitter to counter what they see as being a bastion of anti-government sentiment. And as I said, it seems, you know, day in, day out now that there's becoming more of a crackdown. The country's becoming more and more polarized. And certainly people on the anti-government side of the spectrum think that the government's not done yet and it could take extra measures after these elections. The prime minister said that he would add to an internet law passed last month, which allows the government to block sites without going to the constitutional court, with new, you know, augment that with new legislation. So it certainly looks like the government's eyeing more of a crackdown to put Turkey in line with some of the less, you know, salubrious regimes that we see around the world that are seeking to control the flow of information on the internet.
And I understand that Syria, China, Iran, and Turkmenistan are among those who block Facebook. So they would be, if they do carry through with this threat, join that company.
Exactly. That's sort of it's kind of a rogue's gallery, I suppose. And although we're not there yet, it's very interesting to see just how quickly things in Turkey have changed. I should say the prime minister says, you know, that these are concocted allegations. He says that groups, you know, not just the Gulenists, but other groups, international groups that are opposed to his government, are using these platforms to make false allegations against him. And he is still the most popular politician inside Turkey. He has a groundswell of support. So it wouldn't be him necessarily going out on a limb here. There are a lot of people who would actually support such an action. This is just testament to how polarized the political atmosphere has become here in recent months.
Well, Joe Parkinson, I want to thank you for calling in from Istanbul and telling us all about this story.
Great to be here, Mike. Have a nice day.
You can find Joe Parkinson at the Wall Street Journal's website at WSJ.com, and you can find him on Twitter at JoeWSJ. Well, The Intercept's Peter Mass reports this morning that the NSA has an in-house advice columnist. No, I'm not making this up. An NSA official writing under the pen name Zelda is the spy agency's very own Dear Abby. According to the story, her Ask Zelda columns appear on the agency's intranet and can be read only by those with the right clearance. Her topics include things like what to do when a coworker smells bad or steals soda from the NSA's employee refrigerators and falls asleep in the job. And we learned about Zelda as part of the endless trove of documents uncovered by NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden. Joe, I think she's been giving the NSA some bad advice because they've been making some bad moves lately.
You know, interesting times. And, you know, as Zelda suddenly becomes SEO'd with NSA across the web, I wonder what Nintendo's lawyers will be thinking in the days ahead in terms of a cease and desist here.
Man, these Edward Snowden documents just keep churning out fascinating tidbits about our tax dollars at work. Well, just in time for March Madness, Motorola introduced new college colors for the Moto X, along with custom cases for dozens of universities. If you live in the United States, you can get your college colors along with the team's logo on Motorola's Moto Maker phone customization site. The phone costs $399 off contract, same price as a non-college colored Moto X, unless you have an EDU education email address, in which case the price is $339, a kind of student discount. Nokia's Lumia Icon Windows phone also comes in any color you want, as long as you want either black or white. However, the upcoming Lumia 630 will come in a wide variety of fruity colors, according to a freshly leaked photo by Evan Blass on his EvLeaks Twitter account. Joe, do you think that the phone companies are, you know, they seem to be turning to colors and, you know, trivial things like that to sell phones. Have people stopped being interested in features and processors and good cameras?
I think people are very interested in features. The problem is the phone makers, the device makers, haven't been able to come up with new features. And I think you used the key word there, Mike, when you were describing this. You used the word fruity, and I think back to when the original IMAX launched in their fruity colors. Fact is, the original IMAX weren't all that innovative, but they came in a lot of colors, and people bought them up. And now that the mobile market is maturing quite a bit, we're back to the color wars, and that is not an innovation war in any shape or way.
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre, but, you know, for people who like colors, you know, it's a good time to be buying a phone. Well, in a sec, we're going to tell you about a social network for drunk people. No, I'm not kidding. But first, I want to tell you about Squarespace.com. Of course, Squarespace is the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy for you to create your own professional website or online portfolio. I've been a very happy customer for quite a while, and I absolutely love Squarespace, and I'm going to tell you why. If you want to create a website, you don't want to create a bogus one. And if you have pretensions that you're going to be a great designer and a great engineer, you might want to think again, unless you really do have those skills. It's very easy to create a website. It's very difficult to create a good website unless you're on Squarespace.com. Super easy to create a great website because you simply go in there and choose from among their 25 beautiful templates. Once you've chosen a template, you can customize it and modify it to your heart's content. If you don't like it, go back, try another template. It's very easy, very fast, and very convenient. If you ever have a question, you can contact their tech support, which is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, which is fantastic. They also support e-commerce. It's fantastic. If you want to sell something on the internet, they will make it very easy for you to accept money for goods and services offered on your website. They also have a logo creator tool. So if you have a small business, you do want to sell things, you can just go in there and forget about dealing with a designer and paying the price of a designer and going through the hassle of finding a good designer. Do it yourself and build your own logo using their amazing tools. You can check out how this looks at blog.squarespace.com, but, you know, it's better to go check it out yourself. It's very, very easy to just go try it. They have a new Squarespace metric app for iPhone and iPad, which lets you check your site stats and other metrics on the go, and they have a similar one if you're a blogger. So start a free 2-week trial with no credit card required and start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code TNT, and that will get you 10% off. Also, show your support for Tech News Today, and we appreciate that. We also thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today, and remember that a better web awaits, and it starts with your new Squarespace website. Wait a minute, a social network for drunk people? The blogs are regurgitating a claim by two guys who put up a website claiming to be building a social app and service and hardware device called Liver, L-I-V-R. According to the site, an embedded video, you plug in a breathalyzer into your iPhone or your other phone and install the app. And then when you want to interact with the app, you have to prove you're drunk enough by blowing into the attachment. Your boozy breath unlocks the app where you can post messages, play games like Truth or Dare, Drunk Dial, or Drunk Hotspots, which shows nearby locations and ranks them according to how wasted everybody is in those spots. My take is that I am skeptical of this. I think it's probably a hoax. And if we are being punked, I applaud the punkers for creating a brilliant parody of the earnest startup launch marketing so common in the industry. If, on the other hand, this is a real product, then I'll go ahead and predict that they will fall flat on their face. Well, in other news, if you're sitting on the fence about whether South by Southwest is worthwhile, well, here's the best reason I have heard. Starting today, show attendees will be able to get free Oreo cookies created by a vending machine that works like a 3D printer, which prints each cookie in less than 2 minutes. The cookies are customized by the sugar-craving users, who can choose from among 12 cream-filling flavors and cookie colors. The machine was created in partnership with Myatt Design and the South by Southwest Oreo Lounge. Sounds like a lovely place. We'll also have a DJ, a milk bar, and free Wi-Fi. Joe, you know, this is the future, 3D printed food.
Well, you know, I think the big thing here is whether or not it's going to support the double stuff Oreo. You know, for me, that's always been the take-home favorite. So we'll see how that works out.
Hopefully, if you just keep pressing the button, you just get another stack of creamy filling every time you press it.
Yeah, just remember, I don't want twice the cookie. I want twice the filling. That's all.
Okay, you heard it here first. If you're at Oreo, Joe is asking for more filling. And, you know, someday maybe you'll have a home printer that you can print your own Oreo cookies. It's going to be just like the Star Trek where, you know, Earl Grey tea and Oreo cookies. Out it comes. Well, Joe, I want to thank you for guest co-anchoring today. It's always awesome to have you on.
Thank you for having me, Mike. It's always great to see you.
So where can people find your work?
Over on thevarguy.com, also on mspmentor.net, talkingcloud.com, and Talking Cloud has no in it. So come visit us, and I look forward to chatting online.
Wonderful. Well, thanks again. And you can get to breaking news every day by following Twit News on Twitter. You can subscribe to Tech News Today, and we encourage you to do that, at twit.tv/TNT. Email us at tnt@twit.tv or leave us voicemail by calling 260-TNT-SHOW. Subscribe to our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com and follow our social pages by searching for Tech News Today on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, and YouTube. Also, don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. every weeknight, including tonight. And my name is Mike Elgin. I thank you for tuning in. We'll see you Monday.